Hi, everyone. Welcome to Packers Unscripted from Packers.com. I'm Mike Spofford, sitting alongside Wes Hodkowitz. We're coming to you here from our studios at Lambeau Field. And Wes, it's minicamp week. It's the final week of the off-season program before the players and coaches, for that matter, take about a five-week break leading into training camp. And as Coach McCarthy has done in recent years here, these final three practices for minicamp, he has excused the select veterans, I guess you call it, players with 5 years or more experience. They kind of get an early weekend pass, I guess you might call it. And the focus of these final three practices of minicamp is on the younger players on the roster and getting them more snaps, more reps, and just getting them that much more up to speed before training camp rolls around.
Yeah, and I think the one thing McCarthy's always talked about here is that it's about being able to give those guys opportunities, because this is the time for them to get through things at a slower pace, really be able to understand things, so then when they get back for training camp, they can hit the ground running. A lot of talented young guys on this roster. First time that Kevin King is coming in now, the Packers' first pick in this last draft. So, you know, being able to give him as many reps as possible, being able to give a lot of these young players on the roster can be really beneficial for them going forward.
Yeah, this is a big week for Kevin King. You mentioned him, the first-round pick, cornerback out of Washington, unable to participate through the 4 weeks of OTAs because of Washington's school calendar and the NFL rule not allowing him to be involved until you get to this stage, minicamp, which is mandatory based on an individual team's rules. And King, to this point, as far as we know, has been kind of doing computer FaceTime type of stuff with his position coach, Joe Witt. But Joe Witt even told us in speaking to the media that as much as they're trying to go over and get everything covered, not having that translation from the classroom to the practice field, that's a big gap that needs to be filled, and King gets to start to fill it this week.
Well, and this is a game, too. It's not about theory. You know, certainly there's the basic principles of the defense you have to learn. You have to learn the playbook. But a lot of it is on-field instruction and being able to understand the position you're playing at this level. You just lose that. There's no way to replicate that. You can't really set up and, like, maybe play Madden on both sides and be like, okay, now you're going to move this way or that way. No, I mean, you have to really be able to get in the system and absorb it. You have to be in the classroom with those other players, being able to bounce ideas off each other. One thing I think, and I remember listening to Kenny Clark and Dean Lowry talk about this last year, while it wasn't a perfect system by any means, having the chance to work together, because they both were on that same system,
right,
that they weren't in the OTAs, they had each other to kind of bounce things off of. Kevin King's on an island by himself. It's him and Joe Witt working together on FaceTime or Skype, whatever the, you know, mode of communication might be. That's difficult for a young player. So now being able to get back in Green Bay, start to really take what he applied these last few weeks and get it out on the field, it's going to be really three very critical, important days for him during this mini camp, and being able to really be able to just show what he can do and really implement it into his game.
Yeah, I would imagine he's as excited as any of the young rookies here at this stage, because, boy, you have to believe, I mean, all the buildup, all the training that goes into the combine and the draft and everything, then all of a sudden it's like he's kept away. Like,
right,
there are these rules that say, no, you can't, you can't be involved yet. That's got to eat away at a young player. I mean, I know they have to follow the rules. It is what it is. But he's got to be awfully anxious to really make the most of these 3 days before the break, then leading into training camp.
Yeah, it is difficult, because I was talking to a couple guys in the locker room a week ago, and the common sentiment was, this is a job. You go to college, you want to get a job. Well, Kevin King got a job. So for him to have to go back and wait, it doesn't help him in that. It's like getting hired for something and then, you know, yeah, you're gone for 4 weeks, and then by the time you get back, well, now you got to know what you're doing. It doesn't work that way. The other thing, too, I think that's really interesting is the fact that the Packers, for whatever reason it might be, the young cornerbacks have had to play a lot in this defense the last few years, whether it be injury, opportunity, what have you. Demaryius Randall played a lot as a rookie. Quentin Rollins played quite a bit as a rookie. You look at Casey Hayward, what he did in 2012. With how many guys you need, with how spread out the offenses are getting in the NFL, there's a good chance, by one way or another, Kevin King is going to have to play this season. So not having those past few weeks, certainly a detriment. The hope would be, as I talked with Kenny Clark a little bit, is that it's not something that can't be overcome. You might have to work a little harder. You might have to do a couple different things. But you still can be able to get to where you want to go in your rookie season.
Yeah, and you mentioned it, the number of cornerbacks that are going to be needed throughout the course of the season, this dedication with Kevin King to try to keep him up to speed as best as possible. The Packers would have been doing this with him if he were a seventh-round pick or a first-round pick as he is, because the value of what he potentially can bring to this defense and how they're going to need him and use him, it's unmistakable. He will be a key part of this defense one way or another.
Yeah, and I mean, it's a first-round draft pick. They're going to get opportunity – excuse me, first pick. I always get that mixed up with
yes,
him. You know,
I keep doing that as well, yes.
But their first pick in this draft, they have high hopes for him, 6'3", 200 pounds. I mean, what he brings to the table, there's so much to like about it. Joe Witt's incredibly excited to work with him. And now, for the first time, we'll finally get to see him out on the field.
All right. Well, with that, Wes, we'll throw it to a break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. I'm Mike Spofford. He's Wes Hodkowitz, and Wes, with minicamp here underway, the final week of the offseason program, we've talked a lot throughout this last month during OTAs. It's really hard to get a sense of offensive and defensive linemen, linebackers, running backs, the guys who really need the pads on and need the contact in training camp, the preseason games, to get a sense of just what they bring to the table. But there are positions, even in these non-contact practices, you can start to get a sense of some guys. We talked about cornerbacks in the first segment. Wide receivers is the other spot. Those guys, you know, their battles down the field at the line of scrimmage. You don't always need the pads on to necessarily see who's winning those battles. And the Packers have some young wide receivers. We'll talk a lot about position battles leading up to training camp and as training camp gets underway. But let's start right here with wide receivers. You have Jordy Nelson, Randall Cobb, Devontae Adams. I think your top three is about as set in stone as it can be. But after that, boy, there's going to be a lot of jockeying for position, a lot of sorting out to do on the depth chart. You have Jeff Janis, you have Geronimo Allison, Trevor Davis, a draft pick last year, two draft picks this year, D'Angelo Yancey, Malachi Dupree. This is going to be really a position to watch here throughout the summer and through the preseason games to see how it sorts itself out.
Yeah, I would even throw Max McCaffrey in that conversation.
Good point.
Too.
Finished
last year on the 53-man roster after being on the practice squad. Yeah, you bring up a great point, Mike. That it seems like Green Bay, more than any other position, has drafted incredibly well at receiver, particularly in that second round, as you brought up Cobb, Nelson, and obviously Devontae Adams. But what's interesting, too, is that there's opportunities for those guys in the second tier. I think you've seen Jeff Janis step up over the last few years. You've seen, you know, flashes with Trevor Davis and what he brings to the table. And this is really, there isn't, as you kind of cautioned, there's not a whole lot you can get out of, you know, some of the line work. And, you know, and a lot of these guys are just trying to get into the system and understand what's being asked of them, particularly these younger players. But the receiver position is one where you can see guys separating themselves, because those one-on-one battles with cornerbacks, a lot of that is foot speed. A lot of it is technique.
Yep.
And looking just specifically at Trevor Davis, I was impressed with what I saw in the spring. I think you've always seen the ability with him in terms of his speed and quickness and explosion. But it seemed like he was able to tie together some more of the concepts. And training camp is ultimately going to be what decides this and what's going to shuffle out that depth chart. But being able to maximize these opportunities is critical for these young guys. And a guy like Geronimo Allison started to put himself on the map last year at this time before going on and having a training camp that ultimately didn't get him on the roster initially, but did tell the Packers that this kid can play. Same thing goes for those young receivers. So it's going to be a really good competition to watch. I think it's going to be probably the most entertaining one to watch during training camp to see, okay, from four on, who emerges.
Yeah, you mentioned Max McCaffrey, and I should have brought him up as well, because in the practice last week that was open to reporters, we've been able to see one OTA practice per week throughout things up to this point. He made a heck of a touchdown catch in a red zone drill, you know, in traffic, you know, reaching up, tough grab. You know, you see a play like that, and yeah, there's no pads on. Nobody's coming across to, you know, knock his block off as he tries to, you know, make that catch in traffic. But you see a play like that, and you kind of go, oh, okay, well, here's a young guy who's been trying to take the long road, undrafted, time on the practice squad, all of that. But then he makes a play like that, and you go, maybe this guy does belong. He's starting to really prove something out there. Now, there's a long way to go, and training camp and the preseason is really what's going to decide it. But those types of plays get recognized.
Well, and there are, Mike, when you get to training camp, there are those errors that guys will make, you know, where, you know, contested balls, they just can't bring it in. They can't really defeat the cornerback. But this time of the year, you look for those unforced errors, the ones where, okay, you're not going to get hit, but yet you still drop the ball anyway. You run the wrong route. You're not where you're supposed to be. We hear it during practice, you know, coaches talking to their guys, okay, if you can't be where you need to be, you're not going to be on the field. So being able to minimize those is so critically important. And I thought that's something all these young receivers, for the most part, did really well in terms of just being able to, you know, take what's given to them and be able to you know, do what's being asked and not trying to do anything more than that this time of the year. Yeah, you're going to need those big plays during training camp to make a roster. You're going to need to show up in those preseason games. But this time of the year, it's understanding, okay, what is my route? What is my assignment? And fulfilling that assignment. I think that's something McCaffrey's done well. I think that's something, as I said earlier, that Davis has done well in showing that they have what it takes and they know what's required to be a guy on this 53-man roster at the end of August.
Yeah, and in mini camp this week, with Aaron Rodgers excused, with Jordy Nelson, Randall Cobb excused, these young receivers are going to be getting more snaps with Brett Hundley, Joe Callahan, Taysom Hill. These are the quarterbacks that they're going to be getting those training camp and preseason game snaps with as well. This is the introduction to it from a volume standpoint, that it's not just one or two snaps at the end of a drill because they're further down the depth chart. They are the depth chart, right, in this mini camp week, and that's what makes these 3 days, these last three practices of the offseason program, so important.
When you think back to last year, too, with Jordy Nelson coming back off his knee injury, I think Ty Montgomery had missed some time because of the ankle when he was still at receiver. Right. That was the chance for Jeff Janis to get involved with the first-team offense. It was a chance for Trevor Davis to get more looks. Those things are invaluable because, yeah, as you said, you're not always going to get those looks. And being able to take advantage of those this time of the year, that's ultimately what is going to tell the coaches, all right, when we get back in the summertime, this is how much this guy's going to get. This is what we can expect from him.
Yeah, definitely. With that, we'll throw it to another break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford joined by Wes Hodkiewicz. And Wes, shifting gears to some of the off-the-field happenings right now in the land of the Packers, you took a trip earlier this week down to the Madison area for Mike McCarthy, Mike and Jessica McCarthy's 8th annual golf invitational, a charity that is supported, that is really near and dear to their hearts, the American Family Children's Hospital in Madison. Tell us about your trip and what you saw and what you learned down there.
Yeah, it was fun. I mean, anytime you can get out on a golf course on a Monday morning, that's always something that's worthwhile and fun. But beautiful day for it. The Legend at Bergamont in Oregon, Wisconsin is where it was held.
Okay.
As you mentioned, the 8th annual event, something that him and his wife got involved with in 2009, raising money for the American Family Children's Hospital. Now I've raised over $2 million towards that effort. And a two-day event. They started off on Sunday with a ceremony, reception, live auction. All the proceeds go into supporting that hospital and their efforts for children and anywhere from infants to teenagers, giving them access to, I think it's a network of over 200 surgeons and pediatric specialists to work through whatever their condition might be. What was interesting, McCarthy talked about it too, when they first were looking to get involved with the charity, they just had to walk in that building the first time to see the care that the nurses provide, just what the atmosphere's like, how happy the children are in that environment. And that told them that would be the right place to do it, the right place to direct their efforts. And, an effort now, too. He said he doesn't really pride himself on his golf, but, a chance to get out there and support a good cause. Had a bunch of his assistant coaches with him and some Packers alumni to make it a pretty fun day over on the golf course.
Yeah, and Mike McCarthy is a guy, he'll wear his emotions on his sleeve once in a while. And when you talk about, he's talked before about the first couple of times he went and visited American Family Children's Hospital. You walk around and visit the patients, and it means so much to those patients and those families. But he's talked about the impact that it's had on him and seeing what all goes into the care that's required, the care that's needed, and the struggles that these kids and these families have to go through because of unfortunate illnesses, injuries, whatever the case might be. And Mike and Jessica McCarthy have been very dedicated to this. Clearly, their initial visits down there had a lifelong impact on their perspective on this, and it's tremendous to see all the money over the years now that's been raised for such a great cause.
Yeah, I think everybody gets it. Everybody that's been a parent, you're a parent, in terms of what it's like to have a child and to have invested so much into them, and really just getting stuck with some bad luck.
Yeah.
I mean, that it's not anything that these kids have brought upon themselves, and it's just averages. And for them to be in that position, it's tough. And one of the reasons they got involved, I think the current facility was built in 2007, because there was a big need for it.
Yeah.
And there was a big need to be able to find ways to help these families, both in state and people that travel this way, that to see a particular specialist from those hospitals. And from McCarthy's standpoint, he was very fortunate. I think he said that a lot, that he's had very healthy, vibrant children, and to see people that weren't that fortunate is something that did have a big impact on him. And it's why he's been so dedicated now for 8 years to the process and being able to get out there and do it. It was a busy week for him. You have OTAs 1 week. I think he had another engagement over the weekend, came back on Sunday then in Madison and spent the 2 days down there. But I think it's something that he feels is really well worth it, and being able to see how that impacts the lives and kind of the trickle-down effect from that that goes along with it.
Yeah, a cause that's near and dear to his heart for sure. And with that, we'll throw to another break. Back with more on Packers Unscripted right after this. Welcome back to Packers Unscripted. Mike Spofford here, Wes Hodkowitz over there. Final segment, Wes. With training camp just over the horizon, as we've talked about, very soon, with any day now, really, we should be getting the full training camp schedule and find out just how all the practices and everything lay out. But we have found out an announcement made late last week. Family night, the annual practice inside Lambeau Field, the most highly attended NFL practice probably in the entire league, Saturday night, August 5th. So make your plans, get your tickets when they go on sale, all of that jazz. But the Packers, this has become a great tradition. It's gone through some different modifications and whatnot over the years. But to see 60,000 plus people come out to watch the Green Bay Packers practice, it's a fun night, and you see a lot of young kids in the stands, which I think is the neatest part of it.
Yeah, and also just an add on to that, I think probably the biggest question we've gotten to the insider inbox in 2017 overall,
yes,
was when was the date going to be for family night?
Yes, I mean,
people make huge plans for this. I mean, this is something where you can come in, obviously be a part of some of the training camp practices. It's at the end of that week of which that first kind of full week of all-out practices and to get on the field. And there's been some modifications to it. It's not in the same form that it used to be with them moving away from the scrimmage, but still a very big night, and being able to see those guys on the field, the offensive line and Aaron Rodgers have kind of made that habit out of it now every year, jumping in the stands, doing that one Lambeau leap for a lot of them the entire season after that first score in a team period. The one thing I think that's been really fun, though, is the essence of it has always been the same. You have the fireworks, you have the whole pageantry of it. That is what I think adds a lot to it, because it is, for a lot of people, that might be their one chance to get up here for a game this year or be inside Lambeau Field for an event.
Definitely.
Incredibly affordable. And I know the first time I was a part of it was actually when I was covering it in 2012, but still being there in the press box, seeing everybody kind of filter in for that and just the passion and energy they have for the event. There's nothing else like it. It's certainly one of a kind.
Yeah, my decade plus in covering family nights, a lot of memories of thunderstorms. Delays and things sometimes, unfortunately, having to be canceled, and the weather doesn't always cooperate. Last couple years, from what I recall, the weather has been pretty good. Hopefully that continues again this year. But it's it's a fun night because, you know, we talked earlier in the show about these younger players trying to make a name for themselves. You know, a guy will catch a touchdown pass or intercept a pass, and you know, some of these guys, they haven't heard 60,000 people cheer for them before. You know, I mean, it's a big moment. It's an eye-opening thing. It's sort of that intermediate step between, you know, the pressure of a training camp practice where they know the coaches are watching every snap and every rep, you know, to that the lights going on, you know, being in front of the big crowds in the preseason game where these young guys are going to be really making their bid for the roster. This family night practice is that intermediate step, and it can be a big one for the really young players.
Yeah, and what's interesting, too, is not all these guys went to Alabama or Michigan or Ohio State. A few of them did. But for the most part, there's a lot of guys that are coming from the FCS level. There's some guys that are coming from the Division II level. You know, you look at Joe Callahan, was Division III Wesley. Some of these guys only played in front of 10,000, 5,000 people. I remember Brandon Bostic a number of years ago. He played at Newberry Division II.
Yeah.
They had like a capacity of that stadium at like 2,300. So for them, this is a chance to get out there and see the bright lights. And for a few of them, it's a chance to make a name for themselves. Brandon Ross, way back when, had that big interception over Aaron Rodgers that suddenly became a story. A year later, he made the actual 53-man roster and played in the league for a number of years. So this is a chance for guys to not only do things that they would do in practice to impress the coaches, but also potentially make an impact on a fan in the stands and go, oh, yeah, that guy can play.
Yeah, the fans get an up-close and personal look at it. And as I said before, I always like to see all the young kids who are there. They're maybe too young to really take in a three-and-a-half-hour NFL game. But a chance to see the players up close, and it really kind of opens their eyes. They become football fans for a long time, totally. And Packers fans at that. So with that, we're going to sign off on Packers Unscripted for now. Be sure to follow all of our coverage of the team on Packers.com. On Twitter, he's at Wes Hodd. I'm at Mike Spofford at Packers for the team account. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll see you next time.